Mrs. Mariana Bulgemis.
Lütfen.
Thank you. Distinguished participants, thank you very much for inviting me here to this conference. I'm very happy to be with you all in Ankara. In the past, I have taught in a school for the blind. I have been an itinerant teacher supporting low vision children in mainstream schools, and I've worked in early intervention. But at present, my main role is training teachers of visually impaired, but each week I spend some time in mainstream schools with children with low vision. I hope that my paper will illustrate the way in which information which can be got from assessment of vision that we heard about in the first session this morning, how that can be used to help low vision children in mainstream schools. I was very interested to hear the last speaker, İcran Altun, talking about her pupils, and I think you'll be able to see similarities between the work that she does in her special class and the kind of things that we use to help children who are integrated totally into the mainstream classes. The title of my paper is Children with Low Vision, Helping Them to Develop Socially and to Communicate and Learn Through the Curriculum. We want all our children to experience success and happiness in school. For that to be the case, we need to ensure that the educational environment and demands are suitable for them. What does this mean for children with low vision? In a book, How Well Does a Child See?, Eva Lindstedt writes very positively of how vision stimulates and governs a child's movements and actions from the very start of life. The emotional charge of what children see around them motivates them to use their vision even more and provides a means for them to become active and develop into self-reliant and positive individuals. Our colleagues, talking about the importance of early intervention, have indicated how important it is to encourage early use of vision in children with low vision so that they benefit from the stimulation and encouragement of seeing from their early years. Vision is also a means of communication between the child, other people, and the surroundings. In various circumstances, a child with impaired vision should use the main channel of communication, the one which works best for the child. Sight, touch, hearing, all three senses. But how will the child know which is the best? Leah, in her session on assessing low vision, has suggested that we help the child by clarifying how much vision there is for learning in the different educational areas of communication, orientation and mobility, activities in daily life, and sustained near vision tasks. And in which of these areas compensatory techniques or vision substitution techniques will be used. Failure is not fun. The child may become panicky and it can lead to depression. It can also lead to a child choosing not to see or pretending to see. Both of these are ways of trying to avoid failure and protect self-esteem. Let us activate the child for success, says Lindstedt, and help the child to think of seeing as being pleasurable and worth the effort of trying. Now, some thoughts on the curriculum. The curriculum I would define as all the learning opportunities, formal and informal, provided for a child at school. I am not familiar with the curriculum in Turkish schools, but I would presume that you would wish that all children with low vision should have access to the same range of curricular experiences as all other Turkish children. What we have to consider today is how these experiences can be adapted depending on whether a child needs low vision techniques or techniques for the blind. In turn, this depends on the child's visual functioning for a particular activity. Under techniques, we will consider preparation of the environment as well as more obvious issues such as when to use print or braille. Lea Huvarinen has developed a useful questionnaire, and in fact she has distributed it to you this morning. You'll have it in your hands. This questionnaire is to help parents and teachers summarise how visual loss affects the child's functioning in day-to-day life. I am going to use the structure of this questionnaire to help us go through all the different elements of the child's daily curriculum. First of all, communication, access to information, and social contacts. These are cross-curricular issues and play a part in lessons and play at school. I will not address all the items which Leah identifies, but have selected a few. First of all, to perceive facial expressions at usual communication distances. This is often a problem for children, especially if they have poor contrast sensitivity. Class teachers and classmates need to be told that their friend may not see their expressions and so may not respond or may make an unexpected response. Tone of voice or explaining in words can help. Communicative movements. Remembering to call the child by name when addressing him or her will draw the child's attention within the classroom or playground, as waving or just looking may not be enough. Recognition of friends. Teachers and friends need to be told that their classmates with low vision may not see them at a distance. If the child has a condition which makes facial recognition impossible, this should be explained, and suggestions such as telling the children to say who they are. For example, it's Ali. Watching television or videos. The use of television and video is common practice within the curriculum in Western Europe. Availability of equipment may vary throughout Turkey. In schools where they are used, the following are some of the ways to ensure pupils with low vision get the most out of what is to be learnt. Sitting close to the television screen is obviously best. However, this can make it impossible for the rest of the class to see. Videos can be viewed by the low vision pupil before or after the class, and preferably with someone to help point out the important aspects. If resources permit, a separate television or video monitor for the low vision pupil with controls to vary the contrast, brightness and speed can be an ideal solution. This issue will become even more important in the future with the increased use of video and multimedia in taught and distance learning courses in post-school education. Use of computer. As in the case with television and video, opportunity to sit near to the screen is important. Access software which can enable the student to enlarge text, cursor and arrow, change foreground and background colours, and also give the choice of text being read out, has made a great deal of difference to pupils with low vision. If resources permit, the individual use of a laptop computer with access to a printer can enable the older pupil to keep up with the rest of the students in the class. The main problem is financial resources to buy, maintain, and upgrade equipment and software, as well as train teachers to train the pupils how to use it efficiently. If this can be arranged, then the pupils will benefit enormously from this support for learning. Contact or communication with larger groups of children. Often pupils with low vision become well known to all the teachers and pupils in a school, But do the children with low vision get to know them? As we have discussed, it is usually not possible for the child with low vision to recognize people at a distance from their facial features. Explaining to staff and pupils that they should say who they are when calling out or speaking to the pupil would be a big help. In group teaching, games, and when the child comes into a new class, making sure that all the children introduce themselves will help the pupil with low vision to feel secure, part of the group, and able to address other pupils even if he or she can't see them very well. We all know how awkward we feel if we forget someone's name in a group. Imagine how embarrassing and inhibiting it must be if you don't even know who is in the group, never mind their names. Orientation and mobility. Finding places at home and school. Some school buildings and playgrounds can be extremely complex to find one's way around. They may also have many stairs and unexpected obstacles. It is a very useful experience for school staff to try making their way around the familiar environment of their school, wearing sleep shades or spectacles which simulate visual impairment. Suddenly, the place which they thought they could move around in with their eyes closed becomes a place of hazards and unsuspected traps. Orientation and mobility is always considered necessary for children who are blind, but it is just as important for children with low vision, though the emphasis will be different. Learning to recognize and memorize visual cues as well as sound cues. Being given the opportunity to explore inside and outside the school when the pupils are not milling around. Being given the opportunity to ask questions. A little boy whom I support in his local school used always to play only in the area of the school playground. It's taken by a team of people, the parents, the child, the ophthalmologist, psychologist, teacher, a whole range of people are involved in the decision. The names of schools in my country, if the school is for blind children, it's called a school for the blind. If it's for low vision children, it's called a school for the partially sighted. But there are very few of these special schools left in my country. The majority of children are integrated into their mainstream schools with support. And that leads on to the next question about training of teachers to support children who are integrated into mainstream schools. The teachers who offer the main support have to be experienced teachers who take a further qualification as teachers of visually impaired. And the staff, the mainstream teaching staff in the school, receive additional staff development to help them understand the needs of the children. I think that answers the questions I was asked.
Çok teşekkür ederim.